Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Time for Lunch podcast. And one way that Heritage Radio Network has impacted me is it has given me the opportunity to sit down and talk with hundreds of people from all over the world and different cultures. And it is always eye-opening, the things that I learn and get to share on Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is home to transformative exchanges about food. We hope our diverse lineup of shows opens your eyes, educates, and empowers. Join us during our summer membership drive by donating and becoming a member. Members play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. Thank you for your support.
Help the people who help Oaxaca. Since 2009, Seconda has been supporting Oaxaca's underserved communities. Almost 5,000 people annually see their lives improved by this Mexican NGO. They've built and stocked 6 green libraries and 4 rain harvest hygiene stations, benefiting around 800 children and youth. And they've provided training and business coaching for over 120 female entrepreneurs. And much of that work has been done with the recycler communities that have grown around the garbage dump sites in Zaachila. All of that really is just the tip of an ever-growing iceberg. They've also supported legislation and implemented localized trainings designed to prevent sexual violence against girls and youth, eliminate child labor, forced labor, and violations of labor rights in Mexico's sugarcane and coffee sectors, and address the causes of gender inequality. And their small staff has done all of this without ever having offices of their own. For the past 13 years, Seconda has been hosted within the premises of a local bakery, a very kind gift from a very good corporation. But Seconda now needs their own home. They've acquired a plot of land and found an architectural firm, Sans Pont Arquitectura, willing to donate their time to develop plans. Now we need to raise the money to make those plans a reality. The cost of these new offices is around $100,000 US. They've received a matching grant from 818 Tequila that will cover half of that if we can raise the other $50,000. Seconda has done so much to help so many. We're asking you now to help Seconda. Help them build offices that will enable them to continue their existing work and to expand their programs that make Mexico more just and equitable. Make your fully tax-deductible contributions for Seconda at buildoaxaca.com. That's buildoaxaca.com. And thanks. I am Lou Bank.
I am Cha Pariwan.
And this here is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Gags bartenders better understand agave spirits and rural Mexico.
And today we're talking about something that happened upon us a few weeks ago, and I'm still trying to get over it. And I'm actually annoyed at you, Lou, because you had been there before and you were not that impressed. You did not come to me screaming and patting and just being really out of your mind.
So I rarely am screaming and padding. Is that the word
like
you
padding,
use?
Like if you were drowning and you're
paddling. Okay, going out of my mind because that's just not how I am. But I did, in fact, bring it up to you because I was fascinated by it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe just
so what's the it?
Well, right? Before we get into a deeper discussion, according to me, because actually I might have my own version about this, has happened in the past. We went in Guanajuato. And we went to visit
Went to where?
Guanajuato.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, yeah, that's no, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and we went to visit our friends in Hacienda Villasuso, correct?
Did yes, I pronounce Mezcal that Villasuso.
Yeah, sometimes I mispronounce that. And as part of the lovely day we had, I ate some of the best escamoles in my life. I was dreaming about them last night, actually. And if you don't know what escamoles are...
He said escamoles, incidentally, not Eskimos, in case anybody was worried.
Yeah, and if you don't know what escamoles are, you have to check that. Are you opening chocolate in the middle of the podcast, Lou?
Yeah, I need chocolate.
Roy's going to kill us. Anyway, so we go to this hacienda. And, you know, I've visited a bunch of haciendas in my lifetime. And they tend to be dedicated to... you know, the making of sisal or agriculture or many things. But I had never been to an hacienda that, according to what they told us, at some point housed 65,000 humans and was dedicated to mezcal production starting in the 18th century, somewhere in the 18th century.
I'm just going to put a flag on that. I don't believe they said that that building housed 65,000 people. I think that's a great exaggeration. But
it felt like 65,000 people.
Maybe 6,500, maybe on a good day. But, you know, the thing that really was amazing to see, from my standpoint anyway, was in this building that, was this the portion from the 17 or the 1800s?
Which portion?
The portion where the ovens were.
That was the thing that was... Okay, so first let's describe what it was, and then we'll try to figure out when was the time where that was in operation. Because sure. I think a lot of us that have been in the agave spirits context, when we start traveling to the place where they make these things, we encounter very little operations, like almost domestic operations, right?
Oh, not even almost.
Yeah, domestic.
So the biggest ones could still be in somebody's backyard usually.
Correct, yeah. So it was houses connected to distilleries, to palenques, to vinatos, tabernas, whatever you would like to call them. And we had, at least I personally, had never seen an old, like something that was more than 100 years old.
That easily 100.
Yes, that we could categorize these days as an industrial setup.
Yeah, so it's so fascinating. I mean, they're piece of it. I mean, this hacienda had a bunch of extensions to it. So part of the building was built in the 1700s, part of it in the 1800s, I think a little bit of in the 1900s. I don't think there was any 1600s, but I could be wrong. I mean, this was a pretty significantly old building.
And also it was, as you were saying, it was sort of a puzzle. It was in very bad shape.
Really good shape in some ways.
Yes, but it was falling apart. Like, nobody's doing the proper restoration that this place needs. Hey, and
when I'm 400 years old, if I should look so good, I'll be happy.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, so, yeah, whatever. The thing there was that something hit me when we're inside the part of the building that was dedicated to mezcal production that I had never thought about. Steam is a very old technology.
Steam is an old technology, yes.
You know, the first motors that the humans used to power their boats and their trains and so many things was steam, right? And and I think, like, a lot of us think about steam in distillation, I'm not going to say like the enemy, but as a marker of something that is industrial and that it's newer. And here we saw these massive boilers. Like, I don't even know how.
Wait, you're fascinated with the boilers?
I'm fascinated with the boilers.
You know, I thought the boilers were beautiful, but for me, it was those giant ovens.
Well, that's the thing. You have a massive boiler and a massive kiln to throw all that agave inside. I cannot imagine the thousands of liters these guys were pumping out. What are you reading?
Sorry, like, it just struck me that I don't know when steam, like, technology, so I started Googling for steam technology when it was invented, and there's an example from 1606 of a steam-powered water pump here.
Yeah, but I think they got real into circulation in the early 1700s.
But that speaks to your point, right?
Yes. So, yes.
So what? And so, what is your point?
Well, my point is that we were in La Hacienda de Jaral de Berrío, And they were even telling us this story that this kid had the monopoly of alcohol making in the region. This guy got the license to be the only one that was able to be making mezcal and to distribute it among the people around the area. And he had to have this massive capacity of making booze.
Oh my God, those ovens, I can't get over these ovens that are basically like giant chimneys where they would wheel the agave up this ramp, using horses, of course, wheel it up this ramp to the second or what might even be the third story, and then just start loading them into this oven. But they were like these giant chimney, cooking chimneys for agave that if you looked at them, I think there were, was it three or four that were lined up? If you had taken any one of them,
yes,
it would be, the capacity would be greater than any oven I have seen in literally any mezcal or tequila production.
Yes, yes. This was like visiting the pyramids in Egypt, in a way.
I get, as a metaphor, right?
Yes, but yes,
for me,
absolutely.
It was kind of like going to a castle in England where they've got the turrets on the side, and the turrets, like those whole turrets from ground up to the right to the top, like those were the ovens.
Yes. So, and this brings a lot of, so why do I think this is important, or what, like, I don't know if we think this is important.
I think it's important.
But I think that this makes, this begs the point to re-understand what we mean when we talk about traditional mezcal. Because when does a tradition start? 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, 300 years. And even if you go and stretch this into 300 years, they were making a lot of mezcal
in an industrial
setting closer to 300 years ago.
Or at least 200.
At least 200. That's still quite a bit. So,
well, I'll tell you, you know, for me, the thing that it brought to mind is, as I think about how tequila became so industrialized in order to fulfill the demand that was, you know, after they brought tequila to the 1893 World's Fair and everybody was like, oh my God, I need this, right? And then tequila, that little community that was called tequila, suddenly had to expand into other communities so that now tequila is somehow five states as opposed to, like, I don't know.
A town?
Yeah. So like that, and then the people making it had to start industrializing their processes. You know, here you had this process that was set up that was relatively what I would, I mean, I get that steam engines are an industry.
Boilers.
But when you look at how it was set up, it was still relatively pre-industrial, and they had the capacity to fulfill the worldwide demand. If people had instead been looking for a Potosí instead of tequila, if they had, like, if that had been the mezcal that was brought to that World's Fair, like, I think we'd be looking at a completely different spirit.
Oh, we'll be talking about Salmiana.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the other thing that I was tremendously impressed by Salmiana. We visit some contemporary operations that honestly, I think that they are the inheritors of this tradition of these haciendas that we visit, and Santa Teresa being one of them. And this was a 40 ABV expression that comes out of it, that it's extremely affordable. And it's made with 100% wild Salmiana. And it's nuts how good it is. Mm-hmm. And it is the definition of an industrially made mezcal. And it is, it has complexity, it has beauty, it has acidity, it has sweetness, it has every buzzword you want to put around it. It deserves it. And they do an añejo that is out of this world. So, it just for me, you know, like, again, like, I hate to be a one-trick pony repeating this over and over again, but...
You know, I hate for you to be too, but go ahead.
No, but it's still so exciting to be finding El Dorado over and over again in mezcal. You know, like, I just didn't have idea of the, all the elements that nourish the tradition in this area of Guanajuato, San Luis Potosí.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea how this was not just like a bunch of kids now jumping into the mezcal craze, but that they're actually, the way they're articulating their craft is tremendously informed by the history of the area.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%, but I'd also add, I think it's equally as interesting when we go and visit somebody like Tomas Nava, right? In San Luis Potosí Centro.
Who I don't remember. I'm sorry.
You remember Tomas. He was making the whiskey. He's malting his own corn.
Oh, Lord. Okay, right? Yeah.
So then you've got this giant operation making, you know, quote unquote industrial mezcal that I don't know if they, did they qualify as artisanal? I don't remember if they were certified artisanal or not. Santa Teresa.
I don't believe they're even, they're
certified.
They're certified.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not okay, sure. Anyway, they're certified.
But you know, so you've got that on the one hand, which is really cool to see, right? This old operation making a ton of mezcal. And then you've got this kid in his tiny little, like, not even a warehouse. I don't even know what you'd call the space. And he's malting his own corn and making whiskey from it. He's got these beautiful cacti and he's pulling the cactus prickly pear off of there and he's fermenting
in
this. He has a dunder pit. He's got his vinasses that he uses to make basically like starter.
He has some clay pots that he's experimenting with. He's got, he has a bunch of the, it's a mad scientist at work in the best of possible
ways. And he's just a kid.
Yeah.
Not the way you use the word, but the way I do. And he's doing such cool stuff. So, you know, what does all this mean? You know, for me, what it means is, God, once you start driving out of the places everybody else goes, and you start looking, you find some remarkable stuff.
And also, you have to give yourself the chance to rethink what you've been told. Like one characteristic of most of the spirits we tried there was being 40 ABV, and a bunch of the kids we know, that will make them very nervous.
Yeah.
So that's, you also have to be willing to rethink what is quality, what is good taste, what is an acceptable mezcal in your own mind.
Right. Yeah, I think it's really easy to fall into that trap where you've had 50 expressions from one place that reflect one idea. And then when you taste something that doesn't reflect that idea, instead of recognizing it's different, you identify it as wrong. In which case, you're the one who's wrong.
Well, you're missing out.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's a wrap, Java.
Yes, we took way too long. Adios, señor Lu.
Hasta pronto.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lu Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lu is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking,
and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.